Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to today's Asia Pacific Regional Update, where you will be hearing from Stewart Upson, Neil Fesim, Patrick Boocock, Jin-Suk Lee, Stuart Mercier, and Rebecca Ferse. Stewart Upson, over to you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Eddie. Hi, everyone. Stuart here. Thanks for joining today's call. After the last call, we received a lot of great feedback, and so we've decided to hold these calls every 2 weeks for the next little while to keep you updated on how we're navigating the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Last time I had the business group heads talk a bit about what has been going on in each of our businesses, but given it's only been a few weeks, we thought we'd mix it up a bit today, and instead we're going to go around the region for our updates. So to start, Neil Fesim is going to talk about the situation in Singapore and the various conversations he's been having with our clients. Then Patrick Boocock is going to tell us what's happening in Japan. Jin-Suk Lee is going to give us the update from Korea. And Stuart Mercier will again share how things are progressing in China. We'll then hear from Rebecca Firth on some of the great Brookfield Cares initiatives that are happening during this period of disruption. Before you'll get the opportunity again to ask the team any questions that you have. We'll take those questions live, or alternately you can email them to the comms and branding inbox during the call, and then we'll read them and address them at the end. So before going to the regions, though, let me quickly update you on our business and also give a bit of an Australian update. From a business perspective, there's not a whole lot to update, as you might guess. It's only been a couple of weeks. What I can say is that I told you last time we're in a very good position to see out this crisis and possibly even make some great investments as a result of it, and that has not changed. Our liquidity remains very strong at all levels. There's been no material new issues that have emerged in our businesses in the last few weeks. We continue to have teams across our business groups and regions looking at some of the new exciting opportunities that may be available to us, and I hope I'm going to be able to talk more about those in the coming weeks. We've also had many people getting on with the job of just managing our portfolio on a day-to-day basis, including getting through the process of reporting on quarter end, managing the various risks we face in the ordinary course, and importantly, ensuring that we all continue to get paid on time. I want to thank everyone involved for continuing to get all those important tasks done on time and to the same high standard, regardless of our very unusual working arrangements in most of the offices right now. Our immediate focus continues to be on managing our business through the pandemic and out the other side. And as I'm sure you're aware from reading the news, the situation changes rapidly as governments respond to infection rates and the progress of the virus. Most of our countries are in a fairly restrictive lockdown state right now that requires working from home. However, there are a few differences in the region. China, for one, is in the process of easing those restrictions whilst maintaining strong testing and isolation regimes for those infected. Meanwhile, Singapore and Japan have had much more relaxed approaches up until recently. But they've experienced some spikes in their infection rates, which have led to much more stringent restrictions being put in place now. So it's clearly not a one-size-fits-all situation, as the demographics and the level of government intervention appear to have a strong impact on the spread of the virus. I'll leave the guys in the region regions to kind of give a bit more detail on those specific circumstances. But that means also that our businesses and our companies have had to be equally responsive, and I'm very proud and impressed at the progress that we've made. Given I'm also the Australian office representative talking on the call, I want to give you a bit of an update on the situation here as well in the country. In terms of the virus impact, the number of new infections per day in Australia have now declined in general to single-digit levels. And I would say that the situation now is looking much better than anyone was expecting 2 to 3 weeks ago. We're all still working from home here, and there are strong restrictions on any activities outside the house. And the slowdown in the spread of the virus here is likely in no small part to the fact that we've had these restrictions in place. So I expect that the government's going to be really cautious in how they wind them back. And at this stage, I would say best guess is that the current situation is going to continue in Australia in terms of those restrictions until at least mid-May. In terms of the types of things that our teams in Australia are dealing with, specifically in our business, I would say there's been a lot of activity on just improving the situation and ensuring that as government creates policy on the run, that we're not disadvantaged as a result. So some of those things include assessing whether any of our portfolio companies are eligible for the government-funded JobKeeper payments, which have been put in place designed to keep people employed even when there's been a loss of revenue in specific companies. Next, we've been working with the industry, property industry, to implement the implementation of the government policy related to commercial rents and the terms relating to tenant evictions and lease terminations. Also, we've been acting quickly to assess the impact of the recent comments made by the Prime Minister about the possible loosening of visitation restrictions in the aged care sector and how, you know, we can respond to that and ensure any loosening is done in a way that still protects our people in those businesses. And as I mentioned last time, we continue to actively negotiate with lenders on matters such as deferring interest in certain specific situations, given changes to some of those business models as a result of the virus. And this is where all of these situations is where our operating expertise really comes to the fore. We've always said this is one of our strengths, and it's proven during times of disruption like we're in now. I've been really impressed seeing how our teams are adapting to these rapidly changing circumstances. For most of us working remotely, government policies also dictate when we're going to return to the office. And whilst I can't tell you when we're all going to be back, and it's certainly going to differ from country to country, I can tell you roughly how we're going to return. To start with, we'll be taking a conservative four-stage phased approach that's designed to keep you safe and ensure that when we're all back, we're back for good. It's going to start with each country, with the relevant government, allowing or encouraging businesses of our nature to return to the office. At that point, we will then implement our phased approach, which means we won't all be back on day one. We'll bring first critical office support back, and then once we're comfortable with how that's gone, we'll then bring in the next tranche of people and so on until we're all safely back in the office. We'll be working with our building managers to ensure there's plenty of protective measures around our offices, and we're also making sure we have adequate supplies of face masks and other personal protection equipment to use if required. We're fortunate in that we're able to be very effective out of the office. And again, I want to thank you all for your amazing efforts and for being so adaptable. Once we have more clarity on dates and the process, we'll let you know on future calls. As I mentioned during our last call, I recently took a week off to spend time with my family during the school holidays and to recharge. I had a great time, and I highly recommend it to anyone that's able. We understand that it's difficult to consider time off work at the moment as a real holiday when you can't travel and there's limited activities that can be done outside of the home. However, it is important to maintain routines, and including taking regular breaks from work. So if you need to take a break, you have accumulated leave and it makes sense for your circumstances, I would really encourage you to take some time off, even if it's just for a couple of days. As Stuart can attest for the China team shortly, when we're back in the office, it's going to be even busier than ever. So we want to make sure everyone is energized and ready to go when that happens. Lastly, just before I throw over to Neil to talk about Singapore and our clients, I wanted to continue the tradition that we started last week on sharing some good news on these calls, and I've asked my fellow presenters to do the same. So for me, given I've just taken the week off, and I'm sure no one wants me to dwell on how great that was, there wasn't too much new happening. The one thing that did catch my focus, though, was that it was really great to see how our infrastructure and property groups have been working together to keep each other and help each other be best placed to receive that JobKeeper subsidy that I mentioned earlier. Although sometimes the work done in our business groups are very siloed, there are many things, such as the JobKeeper, that has broader impact and doesn't make sense for a single group to go it alone, or worse, to have multiple groups take different approaches to the government. I love seeing that at the end of the day, we're all one business and everyone is out there trying to help each other out. So that's fantastic, and I encourage others to look for similar sort of opportunities. Okay, with that, I will pass it over to Neil to talk about Singapore.
Thanks, Stu. Good afternoon, everyone. Stuart and Catherine asked me to provide you all with an update on the APAC Private Funds Group and also what's going on in Singapore. So let me start with the Private Funds Group. As most of you know, the Private Funds Group is on the front line with interacting with our investors across the region. We have approximately $33 billion of capital from over 100 institutional investors across 10 countries in Asia Pacific. And each one of these investors is facing their own unique challenges with respect to the COVID situation. Some of those, like the Australian super funds, are facing liquidity problems as a result of individual members withdrawing their pensions to fund immediate cash flow needs. Some investors are dealing with huge performance losses on their public market equities and fixed income portfolios, which is creating a denominator effect on their real asset portfolios. And some investors are simply just managing politically sensitive situations given their semi-government or sovereign statuses. Many of us have worked through a number of financial crises and recessions in our careers, and the one thing that's clear to me is that companies' reputations are either made or destroyed during moments like this. And Brookfield will certainly be judged on how it manages its fiduciary relationships during this situation. As a result of that, the single most important objective that the APAC Private Funds Group team is focused on at the moment is to ensure that Brookfield's reputation with our investors is better at the end of this crisis than when we went into it. And to achieve that, we're focusing on two main tasks. The first is to ensure that we are as effective and responsive as possible to our investors' requests for data, analysis, and insights on markets, sectors, and their investments with us. And secondly, and just as importantly, to be waking up every day proactively exploring ways in which we can further assist and support our investors with their own unique challenges and needs during this time. Some of that relates to just very simple general market views and insights. Some of that relates to digging deeper into their individual investment performances with our investments, such as, for example, understanding what the credit risks are on the Healthscope portfolio, or when will our China retail malls be back fully operational and growing NOI again. And some of it relates to very simple operational issues, like how to process capital calls or distribution notices in a work-from-home environment with third-party administrators and custodians and trustees. Similar to Stu, I just want to give a really big shout-out to the APAC Private Funds team. It is an incredibly monumental amount of work to be interacting individually with each of over 100 investors from 10 different countries on an oftentimes daily basis, supporting their information needs and stresses and proactively partnering with them to help them through this situation. But all that work is certainly paying dividends, and we are definitely being seen as a partner of choice in these times. And I believe our investors feel like when they're up the creek without a paddle, it's Brookfield that they would like sitting in the canoe next to them. In addition to supporting our clients through this situation and with their current investments with us, we are also seeing a number of investors in the region who have been preparing for this moment of crisis and building up a large pool of dry powder. So we're actually currently exploring with many of these investors ways to partner together to take advantage of the dislocations in the market, the mispricing and the distress. And over the next couple of months, we'll be looking to raise a significant amount of capital with our partners to go and pursue some really great investment opportunities as a result of the dislocation in the market. Moving on to Singapore, and Singapore is really a tale of two halves. As Stuart mentioned before, Singapore was widely held up as a great model of a strong, proactive government and an example of how to best deal with the COVID crisis. Even in mid-January, Singapore had very swiftly implemented aggressive identification, isolation, tracing and treatment protocols in the country and utilized their world-class medical infrastructure and technology to stay ahead of and in control of infections. As a result of that, Singapore was able to keep the infection rates down to well below 100 infections and deaths to less than 5 people all the way through February and into early March, and at the same time keeping the economy moving, keeping schools, restaurants and bars open and allowing people to freely move about. But then in mid-March, two things happened. The first is we had a wave of people returning to Singapore from North America, Europe and Australia, including university students and Singaporeans returning home, and bringing with them a large number of imported infections. Secondly, as many of you know, Singapore has tens of thousands of foreign migrant workers working on roads, construction sites and ports, and they all live in very highly concentrated dormitories spread out all around the country. During late March, the virus spread like wildfire through these dormitories, resulting in daily infection rates north of 1,000 per day. As a result, Singapore has now over 11,000 infections, and we are essentially into full lockdown until at least the 1st of June. The Brookfield Singapore office has been in either voluntary or permanent lockdown since mid-January, and you know, similar to the comments that Stu made, despite that, the team has continued to execute on a number of corporate actions and investments largely driven out of India that flow through Singapore. Many of these are in time-sensitive situations, and it's very impressive to see how the team has transitioned the pretty complex operations that they do into a work-from-home environment. On a positive note, Singaporeans tend to trust their government and follow the guidelines set by the government. So you won't see Singaporeans heading to the beach on a lockdown day like they sometimes do in Sydney, or out protesting on the streets like they sometimes do in the US. Additionally, as I previously mentioned, Singapore has one of the highest quality medical infrastructures as a result of its focus on medical tourism. So its ability to identify, isolate and treat patients is very strong, which is one of the reasons why, despite the infection rate now north of 11,000 people, it's been able to maintain the death rate at less than 12 people. So given the recent government protocols, it will put Singapore back on the same trajectory as places like Taiwan, Hong Kong and China. So with that, I hope that's given you just a brief overview of the private fund group's activities and the things that we're doing with our investors across the region, and also what's going on the ground in Singapore. With that, I'd like to hand over to Patrick in Tokyo.
Thanks, Neil, and thanks to everyone on the call for taking the time today. I'm just going to spend a few minutes walking through the situation in Japan and then touch on our business here more specifically. So just starting with the numbers, I think it's fair to say that on a relative basis, Japan has fared reasonably well in terms of confirmed cases and deaths at around 12,300 respectively. And to put this into context, the U.S., which has roughly 2.5 times the population of Japan, has 70 times the number of cases and 150 times the number of deaths. And I think there's a few reasons for this. Like Australia, Japan is an island nation, and we were able to close the borders reasonably early. Japanese, for the most part, are quite respectful of government policies, and the government is now asking citizens to reduce social interaction by 80%, which I think most people, for the large part, are doing. And Japanese are generally practice good personal hygiene habits, even before COVID-19, it was quite common to see people wearing masks in public places, particularly during flu and hay fever seasons. For anyone who's done business in Japan, greetings are generally in the form of a respectful bow rather than a handshake. And it's not uncommon to see office workers, including myself, gargling with iodine solution during cold and flu season. So I think there's just a general habit towards cleanliness. And for those who do get sick, Japan has a very strong national healthcare system, has the highest number of hospital beds per capita of any developed nation. I would say the one exception to this is critical care beds and ventilators, which are in limited supply, so we are closely watching for the possibility of a surge in severe cases. So what we've seen over the last many weeks, I would describe as more of a gradual slowdown rather than a hard stop like we've seen in other markets. And just to give you a bit of a sense of daily life in Tokyo, I would estimate 40 to 50% of offices remain open. A lot of domestic companies just frankly don't have the capability to support a work from home environment. So unfortunately, that means a lot of people are still going into the office. Schools and other public facilities remain closed, and they have been closed since early March. Restaurants, cafes, pubs are for the most part voluntarily closing or closing early. The main commuter passenger rail lines in Tokyo, the volumes are down around 70%, which again is not far off the 80% being asked by the central government. And generally, we're seeing a more vigilant stance towards social distancing when walking on the street or going to the supermarket. So, you know, Tokyo is a dense city. You just cannot avoid walking into someone on the street on your way to the supermarket. But what we're seeing is people will move to the other side of the street if you see someone coming towards you. All of that being said, over the last few weeks, we've probably been seeing some levels of complacency. And we're now seeing daily new infection rates across the country averaging around 500 a day. The good news is if you look at it on a seven-day moving average, that number is coming down modestly. So we're now at a critical juncture where we are approaching our national week-long holiday. The government, both the national government and the local prefectural governments, are asking people to stay indoors to reduce the spread. So I think we're all waiting anxiously to see what happens on the backside of the Golden Week holiday. From a Brookfield Japan perspective, our staff and families are all well and in good spirits. Despite our work from home policy, we had the privilege of welcoming a new team member to cover our real estate business here in Japan. From an investment perspective, we expect to see a number, to Stuart's earlier comment, we're hoping to see a number of attractive investment opportunities over the coming months. Our calendars are full of video and voice meetings as we continue to position ourselves as the partner of choice for many Japanese companies who may need help through this crisis. I'd also add that the Japanese banks are very highly capitalized. They're considered one of the most stabilized banks in the world, the mega banks in particular. And they are continuing to help us help certain Japanese companies in the market. From a fundraising perspective, the PFG team here in Japan raised $65 million in March from Japanese investors, which is fantastic, and are continuing discussions with investors about additional fundraising across various strategies in the June timeframe. Notwithstanding the government's distraction in responding to the crisis, our renewable energy business was able to secure an important government approval, allowing it to commence construction on a 200-megawatt solar power project, and that happened a couple of weeks ago. So in closing, I would say that business is progressing as well as we could expect under the circumstances, and we're cautiously optimistic on how the country looks as we come out of the week-long holiday. So with that, I'll hand it over to Jin Suk in Seoul.
Thanks, Patrick. Hi, this is Jin Suk. It's a pleasure to speak with you today and also be able to provide you with an update on Korea. Korea, as you know, or most of you know, is one of the countries that has been hit early on with the virus, and therefore we've been living it for quite some time now. As we stand and sit here today, the situation has continuously improved, where over the past 2 days, we've only seen single-digit new cases. And over the past week, it's been about an average of 10 new cases. And this is from a peak of about 900 new cases, in late February. So the total confirmed cases as it stands today is roughly 10,700. But the really good news is that we're also reporting a recovery rate, the recovery rate to be edging towards a high of 80%. And so the general consensus domestically and also internationally seems to be that the country has battled the virus relatively well. And while doing so, we've also provided some good practices. As you may have seen, the drive-through testing and also provided hope for some of the other countries that are maybe in their earlier stages of battling the virus. Yeah, as it feels that life is slowly starting to turn back to normal, with most companies coming back to work from their offices, after work socializing picking up, and public retail facilities such as gyms reopening. The two components that the government continues to maintain preventive measures and strict constraints is towards the borders, as we've seen a high rate of imported cases, and schools continue to be run online rather than in the classrooms. Specifically for Brookfield, our BAM employees, we've been back in the office for about 3 weeks now, so I'm speaking to you in the comfort of our office. We're all healthy and well and keeping up the good spirit. A quick cap on our businesses here. From an investment and asset management perspective, the team here continues to look for new investment opportunities and review those that they have in their pipeline. The sole IFC asset continues to operate, and it's managing relatively well, despite having a retail and hotel component. And from a fundraising perspective, the team here has closed and approved commitments of about $400 million, with another $200 million by the end of the first half of this year, which puts us at about a similar level as we were last year, which is great. I'll leave you with a good news from the office, which is that one of our employees, Wombe, who works for our private funds group, Wombe and his wife, Julie, they are expecting their first child later in the year. And just this week, they were told that it's a girl. So I hope that you can join me in congratulating Wombe. And with that, I'll hand it over to Stuart Mercier to talk to you on China.
Thanks, Jin. It's a pleasure to join all of you again this week to provide a bit of an update from here on the ground in Shanghai. I would say, frankly, as it relates to this market, no news is in some ways the best news. We continue to progress on the path towards normalcy. New cases are muted, and in most instances are found from individuals who are returning to China, and the sort of vast expansion in the public health infrastructure here in China has ensured that when anyone returns to China at the moment, they are immediately given a COVID test on arrival before they're either sent to a quarantine hospital if they test positive, or to home quarantine for 14 days, even if they test negative. And so that's really helped to ensure that, two things occur. One is that obviously the number of new infections remains muted, but the second and equally important at this point is that the public perception and the risk of infection continues to be low. And that then encourages people to, begin to return to a life of normalcy. So, as one example, and I never thought I would find myself saying this as I look out the window of the office, it's great to see traffic jams return to the roads of Shanghai. And so I think that's really the important takeaway as we sit here at the moment. As Stuart mentioned at the beginning of this phone call and Neil alluded to in the case of Singapore, I think one of the other key things that our team here in China has really taken to heart and folks elsewhere in the region are now experiencing is that this is going to be a marathon and not a sprint. And there will be moments of setback that will occur either, as a result of the increased implementation of social distancing again, if cases flare up or other policies come and go. But in the interim, this is really an exercise in banking those wins, that when something comes along, positive news presents itself, that it's important to take those moments to heart, because this will be an exercise that sort of plays out in the months ahead. You know, for us at the moment, one of the things that we're most excited about over the next couple of weeks and really points to that return to normalcy is that we would be moving into our new office. And so May 11th and 12th will be the launch days for us as we move down to One East, which is the complex that we acquired last year from the Greenland Group. You know, it's a real testament to the Brookfield Properties operations folks here that have allowed that to occur. Construction got back up and running on the interior fit-out very quickly, and all of our team here has done a great job of sort of laying the groundwork for that move to be possible. And we're excited to be in the new space and consolidating all of our teams into one office. And as I'm sure, you know, many of you now at home will appreciate, you know, it's great to be back in the office and around the water cooler or the coffee machine together. So there's a great deal of excitement on the part of the folks up here for that now coming to fruition. So, you know, as a sort of closing thought, again, I would like to, you know, suggest to all of you that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. We're experiencing it here in Shanghai. It's not a linear and clear path for everyone in terms of, you know, how we will all go about getting there, but it certainly is possible, and look forward to seeing all of you in the various offices in the months ahead. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rebecca for a bit of an update on Brookfield Cares.
Thanks, Stuart. Hi everyone, it's so nice to have the opportunity to talk to you today. So I'm here to give a short update on our charitable and philanthropic activity across the region. When I prepared to talk to you all for, at Town Hall a couple of months ago, just after the bushfires in Australia, I thought if I had a dollar for every time someone had said what a start to the year, I'd be a charitable individual. And as the years progressed, that sentiment still very much rings true. But what has been incredibly heartening to see is the response and camaraderie of all our Brookfield colleagues, in particular the way that members of our team have mobilised with ideas and contributions to relief efforts in time of crisis is particularly impressive. So when news first started to circulate of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, our colleagues in China were proactive in thinking of ways that our business could help. Our Brookfield Cares Committee in Shanghai, led by Ashley Zhu, researched and found ways for Brookfield to help support communities in Shanghai and Wuhan. Similarly, our team members from our renewables business in China, led by Bob Zhu and Daniel Cheng, highlighted ways that we could support rural communities located in provinces that are close to our solar and wind assets. You probably will have read earlier this week in an email from Laurie Pearson that Brookfield's financial contribution globally in response to COVID-19 exceeds $7 million. This includes cash or supplies for such things as hospital supplies, ICU beds, rapid test kits, as well as some support to non-profit organisations who are focused on helping out vulnerable members of our communities through donations of food and mental health support. Also, on our last call, you heard some highlights from our regional heads on charitable contributions across Asia Pacific. Some highlights were the teams coordinating the send of PPE to staff at frontline services, operating companies being connected to redeploy staff who may have been stood down due to COVID, as well as the donating of funds that would have usually been used to purchase perishable head office supplies. Those funds have been donated to OzHarvest to help feed the homeless in Sydney. Our committee members are always brimming with ideas of ways to support our business and of ways that our business and staff can make an impact, and these ideas definitely haven't stopped. So many of you have been asking how you as an individual can help, and the answer is easily. First is donating and filling out a donation request. One of the great perks of being a Brookfielder is access to the Matching Donations Program, where under Brookfield Cares, Brookfield will match donations dollar for dollar. Exciting news is that for qualified donations directed towards COVID-19 relief efforts, we are expanding our typical straight match and will match on a 2-to-1 basis. For information on matching donations, you can either email myself or visit the coronavirus FAQ section on the intranet page where you'll find relevant forms. In addition to donating money, you could consider a couple of other things. So we've been encouraging the team that if you are doing a bit of nesting in this downtime, that you might want to put any unused unused clothes that are still in good condition to the side, and we'll run clothing drives in the various offices. You could also consider donating any spare or excess toiletries to homeless shelters. In Australia, the Red Cross is desperately seeking plasma and blood donations. And also in Australia, if you have any unused mobile phones, AngelCare is collecting them for at-risk members of the community, which isolation has disconnected further. Details of all these initiatives are on our new Brookfield Cares Asia Pacific intranet page, which to access is quite easy. You can open the intranet page and search Brookfield Cares Asia Pacific. If you have any trouble accessing the link, let myself, Ashley Zhu in China, or Jo Lin Ho in Singapore know, and we'll be able to help point you in the right direction. As mentioned, our Brookfield Cares committees across the region continue to uncover and plan ways that we can create, where we can create impact in every city that we work. We'll be sure to share our plans as they become available. I am looking forward to volunteering with you and alongside you all again in person really soon. And that's my update. And with that, I'll throw it back over to you, Stuart.
Great. Thank you, Beck. So I think we're ready to take some questions now. I think I have at least one that's come through on the email inbox. I'm not sure if there are any more, but maybe, Eddie, if you can invite any live questions first and we can go from there.
Certainly, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. That is 0 followed by the number 1. Thank you. Your first question is from the line of Chris. Please go ahead.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks very much for the information today. I just wanted to ask if you could provide an update on what we're seeing in Europe and US in relation to the virus and the potential recovery. I think we covered Asia really well here, but looking on the news, it sort of seems like those areas are more heavily impacted.
Yeah, look, good question. I may not have a whole lot more information than someone else who's watched an equal amount of news. I think it's fair to say they are much more heavily impacted. As a result, you know, our offices, similar to Asian offices, have been working from home for quite some time. I think we're starting to see light at the end of the tunnel in our European offices, but the certainly the American, the US offices, New York being probably the worst, it's still, you know, very much in the eye of the storm, and it's really hard to tell, you know, at what point it's going to start getting better. So it's fair to say those people have it, I think, harder than us right now, especially when, you know, similar to what Patrick said about Tokyo, New York is an extremely dense city, and so it's much, much harder to, you know, work remotely and not, you know, not interact as much with other people. So it's tough. I don't think there's too much more I can say about it. On the business front, again, similar, you know, set of diverse issues to what we have over here. As you might expect, the businesses that are dealing with the most issues are those that are kind of retail facing or have patronage risk. Clearly, we have a very large, you know, shopping mall portfolio in North America that has been heavily impacted. And a lot of folks, as I understand it, are working, you know, day and night on ensuring that, you know, we set that business up as best we can to weather the storm and to, you know, to obviously be in a good position coming out the other side.
Does that answer your question, Chris?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Your next question is from the line of Emma. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a question for Stuart Mercier. You've touched on this a little already, but it would be great if you could give us a bit more colour on how the China team is going now that they're back in the office, and what was their experience like returning?
Sure, Emma. Thanks for the question. You know, I would sort of paint the transition back to the office as being a journey, both personal and professional. You know, as you can imagine, during the quarantine periods here in Shanghai, everybody's experience was different, as it very much is for, you know, the rest of our APAC colleagues at the moment. And as a result, the return to the office process was staged. And so, you know, we had some people who, for example, single, living at home alone, and therefore, you know, were probably earlier to return than other folks with families, with young children, for example, who also had to balance school requirements. And so just by way of example there, while schools still remain closed in Shanghai, another point of optimism is that they've now announced the opening dates, which will similarly be staged from the end of April into mid-May. And so flexibility, frankly, has really been one of the guiding characteristics of the return. You know, notwithstanding that fact, we are all very much social creatures. And it takes a moment like this where you're wrapped up in your house or your apartment really to, you know, bring that theme home. And so what we've seen is a sort of really strong desire for people to come back into the office, to see and collaborate with their colleagues, and take confidence in the ability to return from two sort of key factors. One is just the expansive public health infrastructure and monitoring that's in place. And is being rolled out you know, across the region and the world as we speak. The second is some of those sort of more obvious factors where, you know, when you enter an office building, you pass through a temperature scanner. When you're going to get your Starbucks coffee, you're only allowed into the restaurant if you're wearing a mask. Your temperature is taken, and there's a hand sanitizing machine next to the door if you want to use it. And so there's been some evolution in sort of, you know, individual behavior as a response to all of this, but all of these factors kind of help to drive, you know, confidence of our employees, all of our guests and our retail properties, and are really allowing people to, you know, start to return to normal or at least the new normal.
Does that answer your question, Emma?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you very much. Your next question is from the line of Matt. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Hey, Stuart, it's Matt Grimes. Just a quick question on Oaktree. We've seen plenty of memos from Howard recently. Are you able to give an update on what Oaktree is doing globally or in the region, be it deal activity or on the fundraising side of things?
I'm going to assume that's this Stuart, not Stuart Mercier. We, we need nicknames, maybe. Just as a high level, this Oaktree is obviously a business that, you know, its heritage is in investing in distressed debt, and obviously makes money from making good debts, you know, during times like this. And so, you know, that transaction that we did last year probably couldn't have been timed any better. In terms of purchasing Oaktree, because obviously there'd been a period of time where, you know, markets have been really good, which means Oaktree, although its business was doing fine, wasn't growing particularly fast. And now we're in a situation like this where there's more distress. You know, it's really where Oaktree will shine. And as a result, as I understand it, there is a lot of demand for their product, and a lot of folks, although the, you know, institutional capital is somewhat sparse right now, which you know, Neil and Chris can probably attest to, you know, there's a lot of demand for Oaktree product and people wanting to get into Oaktree funds. And so, although I don't know the latest or the details, and maybe Neil does, you know, there has been talk of Oaktree raising a very large fund in the near term to capitalize on what's going on right now, in addition to deploying their existing capital. So I think that's a really exciting story, you know, part luck, part skill, I would say, as everything is, that we made that investment at that time. You know, we think they're going to do some really great things during this period. And in addition, they're you know, having their skill set on board, it really assists with our navigating of this period as well. You know, I would just say stay tuned on that one. And hopefully once there are, you know, more concrete public things we can talk about, we can bring them to.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Your next question is from the line of Natasha. Please go ahead. Thank you.
I think Natasha might be on mute.
I'm sorry, I don't have a question. I don't know why it's come up with me having a question. Sorry.
That's all right. Good to talk to you anyway.
Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you, Natasha. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is 0 followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. That is 0 followed by the number 1. Your next question is from the line of Charles. Please go ahead. Hello, Charles or Chalbala. Please go ahead. Your line is open. I believe his line is still on mute. Charles or Chalbala, please go ahead with your question.
Move on, Eddie.
Certainly, sir. There are no further questions at this point, sir. Please continue. Thank you.
Okay. I got a message from Jonathan Seller here on my text. He thinks he's in the message queue, but he probably didn't manage to push the right two buttons. What he wanted to say was, I think just riffing on the idea of the different teams working together and helping each other was just to say thanks to Stuart Mercier for the thermometers that have been sent over by the China team, and to Jeff Kendra and the Aveo team for sharing some of those with the Patrick operation. I just think that is fantastic, seeing all the different Brookfield groups help each other, and John has played a key role in that as well. The only other question I think that came through on the message list, a bit of a Dorothy Dixon, but was just wondering if any of the presenters had any positive personal stories that they could share at the moment as well, which reminds me that I don't think many of the presenters even gave their positive story full stop. So I'll have to talk to them after this and make sure we get people to do a better job of that next time. But just look, from my point of view, clearly the positive side of this lockdown quarantine life is getting to spend more time with your family. Not always positive, but most of the time it is. And I've been enjoying that aspect, getting the extra hour or so back that would otherwise be commute, and getting to use that with the family has been fantastic. From my side, my wife likes to, come up with great, ambitious New Year's challenges every year, and then commit the whole family to seeing them through. And this year she came up with doing 20 walks in 2020, which started off great by about the 5th of January, where we'd done one. And then last week we finally managed to do our second one. So it was good to get that one under the belt, but clearly COVID-19 is going to make that task a tough challenge to finish by the end of the year. So if you see me walking a lot, that's why. I don't know that we need everyone in the on the speaker list to give their personal story, but if anyone else would like to speak up, let me know.
Yeah, sure, Stu. I'm happy to jump in. It's Neil here. I think Jinsook's presentation just reminded me as well that we had a wonderful piece of news also in the Singapore office a couple of weeks ago. One of our employees, Aisha, in our corporate secretarial team, gave birth to a little baby girl a few weeks ago. So a big congratulations to Aisha for that. And maybe just from my perspective, I don't think I remember a time when I'd been in Singapore for two full consecutive weeks. So it's for me it's really been enjoyable just to be at home for an extended period of time, and more importantly the chance to just have breakfast and dinners with my kids, which I don't usually get a chance to do, and it's amazing how much you learn about your kids just sitting down and having a meal with them. So that's been really positive for me.
Great, thanks, Neil. Anyone else want to share, or otherwise I'll move on. Hearing nothing, I'll wrap it up. I think it's been great to have everyone join the call. Hopefully people are still finding this useful. I think if anyone has any feedback, please let Catherine and her team know. We're happy to keep this a work in progress.
And also, you know, just to finish, I just wanted to thank everyone again for everything you're doing to keep our business moving ahead in these very strange and unusual times. Again, I wanted to say we're in a position of strength, and that is obviously all because of your hard work. Lastly, and most importantly, while I know some families have been sadly impacted by COVID-19, I do continue to be grateful that all of you are safe and well. So thanks for dialing in today, and please stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our teleconference for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you.